Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do a cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. In 2018, Evofem Biosciences founder and CEO Sandra Pelletier was hard at work developing Phexxi, a non-hormonal contraceptive gel for women. Amid a phase 3 clinical trial evaluating its efficacy, Pelletier, who had been religious about health checkups and had just received a clean mammogram the year before, was blindsided by a diagnosis of aggressive stage 3 breast cancer. After dealing with her immediate concerns about her son, Pelletier's worry soon shifted to her ability to stay in her role at Evofem. But after reassuring discussions with coworkers, she was able to continue to run the company while undergoing treatments, including chemotherapy, a double mastectomy, and a hysterectomy. Today, she's talking with Cure about what it was like to go through the shock of receiving a cancer diagnosis while also navigating a career, and explaining how her product, which is now FDA approved, can help patients with cancer and survivors improve their sexual quality of life.
So, you know, several years ago, as you mentioned, you founded Evofem Biosciences with a focus on women's sexual health and reproductive health. As you were working on developing a product, though, you were diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. So, you know, what led up to that diagnosis? Was it a routine mammogram, or did you start to notice something that led you to go to the doctor?
I will tell you, Ryan, I'm sure when anybody gets diagnosed with cancer, it is absolutely game changing, you know, show stopping, if you will. And for me, that was the case in particular because I had no family history of cancer. I did not have the breast cancer gene. I had had a clear mammogram the year before. And being in women's health, I like to practice what I preach. I'm very serious about my health care. I always go for my checkups. And so I felt nothing. And typically when I would go for mammograms, I have fibrocystic breasts. So there were always some things where I had to go back, but it always ended up being nothing. Get a call that not only was it not nothing, but that I had aggressive late stage cancer. I really did say, honestly, to my OBGYN who called me, I said, look, I promise you, I will tell nobody, but this is one of those times when you called the wrong patient. You really did. And I said, it just can't be right. This just cannot be my diagnosis. And so it was shocking in a way that it's so hard to describe, you know, if you've never been through it, because you're not even sure how to feel or how to react. So what led up to it was really, frankly, I felt completely fine. I used to actually joke a lot with my staff that they didn't have to worry about me ever not being there because I was immortal and that it was a secret and that I was the only immortal human. And so to recognize that you're certainly not immortal and that your life is at risk, it really is a sobering reality.
Okay. So kind of elaborating a little bit on the sobering reality of that, you know, like you said, you in your mind, you felt invincible, that nothing could touch you. And then you get this diagnosis. So yes, blindsided, shocked, but you know, deep down, what are you thinking? Are you scared? Are you nervous? What's going on through your mind?
My first thoughts were, very, very, very scared first for my son. So I have raised my son as a single mother since he was a year and a half old. And so I was very worried that, oh my goodness, what's going to happen to my son? Because I'm his person, you know, I am his person. And so I was very nervous about my son. That was the first thing. But immediately following that, I was so worried about my role at Evofem. I, as a woman moving up in the ranks, all women know that you fight and claw your way to positions of power. You do. And it's hard. And when you get there, you are so grateful because you want to make good decisions. But then I thought, I've worked so hard to get to this spot and now cancer is going to take it away from me. Cancer. And I really thought my board would want to be responsible. I mean, they are responsible, and that they would say, look, you have to take a leave of absence because you have to battle this. You know, we can't let you stay in your seat. So I was worried about my son. I was worried about this job that I love. I love. I don't even think of it as my job. But those were my first worries. And if I'm being really honest, it was never, am I going to make it? Am I going to survive? It was, I have to be here to be the mother of my son, and I have to be here to be the CEO of Evofem because I believe that there's nobody better for either of those roles.
So kind of piggybacking off of that too, as you mentioned Evofem, you know, you're going through these treatments, which we'll touch on in a second, but you're also trying to run this company. And like you said, the board, you know, was on board with you staying on. So what was that like doing that? And also, what advice do you have for others who are facing similar situations when they're going through treatment, but they're also still trying to either run a business or even just, you know, do the 9-to-5 job? What advice do you have for them?
Yeah, so I would say a few things. So one, I was very fortunate that pre my diagnosis, I was able to create and show a reputation that I could handle a lot of pressure. I could handle a lot of responsibility. I was able to multitask at a very disciplined and high level. So I was fortunate that the timing, I had already built a good rapport with my board. And so in that situation, though, I will tell you, I cared a lot about creating a narrative for my conversation with my chairman, where I looked at every possible question he could ask me and developed every possible response, right? And so I mapped it all out. I wrote out an entire speech, a monologue that, by the way, I rehearsed in front of the mirror. And I wanted to make sure that I didn't cry because I didn't want to show weakness. And I wanted him to think I was in control and I was in my power. And of course, that all went to hell in a handbasket because when I said to him, I need to see you in person, which, you know, between us, you know, I really never wanted to have to see the person if I didn't have to. So he kind of knew something strange was up. And so then when I sat down with him, I completely lost my composure. And I, instead of doing all the things that I rehearsed and practiced, I said to him, I really need you to trust me because I know how to run this company better than anybody. And even though everybody's replaceable, I really still feel that I'm the right person to run this company through, oh, by the way, is my cancer diagnosis, which is very serious and heavy. And I'm going to get to the other side of it. And if you suggest I have to take a leave of absence, that's going to be a nail in my coffin. I don't want this to be taken away from me because I need this to help me both as a positive distraction and as knowing that you believe that I can go forward. And honestly, he said, Sandra, just stop. I don't know where you're going with this. I don't know what's in that file folder you brought. I don't know what's going on. But he said, I agree that a lot of people are replaceable. I don't think you are. And if anybody can beat cancer, it's you. And he joked and he said, cancer is going to rue the day it knocked on your door. And, you know, we both laughed, which was great. But I would say this advice to other people experiencing this. Look, I understand there's some situations that are very different than mine, right? Where they don't have the luxury of being the CEO, right? Which you have a lot more power and influence. But the one thing that I would say is that, look, I think human nature is genuinely good, right? I think humans at the end of the day, if you give them an opportunity to be good, they will be. So I think candid transparency, you know, radical transparency is so important because when you put all the cards on the table, right, you sit there in front of a person, human to human, to say, look, I can still do this no matter what level you're at, no matter what. And by the way, we've had people that have come to us with different medical experiences. And when they handled it in the way to say, here's what's happening, here's what the real facts are, here's how I'm dealing with it, here's how I'm going to progress in handling, you know, my treatment and diagnosis. And if I can ever, there's ever a point when I can't handle it, I will absolutely let you know. That kind of statement and confidence, I think people really want to get behind. Because even my board, I said, look, I care about this company in a way where if I can't handle it, I will let you know because I don't want to fumble. I don't want to fumble for anybody, right? So, but I do think that hiding it and downplaying it never seems to be a good strategy in the end, because then you've got to go back if things do get worse, and then people can't trust what you say. I think it's almost better to be even a little more dramatic in the severe state than so then you can backpedal and say, hey, you know what? I guess I'm tougher than we thought, So I really do think it's better to be more dramatic and severe than not, as crazy as that might sound.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. So as we're talking about as your journey, first, looking at your treatment, what was that like, and how did you react, or how did you handle going through all those treatments?
I decided very early on that I needed to have somebody with me who didn't want to go to a pity party. And so my chief of staff is a woman who I joke, she's like the cleaner in the mob, right? Take no prisoners. And so her name is Ellen Thomas. And so I asked Ellen to go with me to every one of my treatments. And the funny part was, as I said to her, listen, there's not going to be any sadness. There's not going to be any pity. We're going to go. I'm going to be there for 8 hours. We're going to get a lot of work done because there'll be nobody bugging me. And so she would bring a roll-up suitcase, honest to goodness, with all of her work in it, her laptop, my laptop, everything. And you could see the nurses like, oh God, here they come again, right? And she would set up a command center during chemo. They would purposely put me like in the last stall so I wouldn't bother people. And we would literally do work the entire time. It was a huge distraction, which was amazing. So one, I think it's important you take somebody that can contain their sadness and that's someone who is either funny or upbeat or who is really going to get your mind off of what you're doing there. And that really mattered. But the other thing that I did is that I was very, very focused and committed on really saying that, so I really believe in what you resist persists. I believe in your attitude, your thoughts create your actions. And so for me, my thoughts were all around not this chemo is terrible, this chemo is killing all my body, this chemo is toxic that way at all. I thought, you know what? This chemo is killing cancer. This chemo is helping me save my life. This chemo is going into my body, and I would imagine it literally going in almost like a gun and like just killing all the cancer cells, right? And when I left, even though physically I didn't feel good and I felt worse the next day, mentally, I would say, you know what? The worse I feel, the more powerful the chemo was and the more cancer it killed. But it was really this mental game that I played with myself, honestly. And it worked. I did it consciously and I knew it was a game. It was still effective. And so for me, I used to psych myself out that I'm going chemo and this is one more step. This is one more bullet, honestly, in the head of cancer. So I really did treat it in a dramatic way. Now, the one thing I do want to say, though, is that what really shook me then, and it still shakes me now when I think about it, is the women who weren't as fortunate as me. And what I mean by that is I would see these ladies come there on a bus. They had nobody with them. They would sit alone. They had two or three children that were getting out of school. They would be so nervous that they needed to get done chemo in time to get on the bus, to get back home, to take care of these kids. You knew that they didn't have enough resources and enough wherewithal to take care of themselves in the way that would really benefit their treatment program. And it was, and you don't think about that, right? You don't think about all these other variables that happen in the lives of these women. And the final thing I wanted you to hear is that the other thing that really set me back is the people who had jobs that really weren't empathetic to the fact that they were in cancer treatment, right? If they were waitresses, well, some of these women wouldn't get the chemo they were supposed to get because they couldn't go to a chemo session for 8 hours and they couldn't be sick and stay home from work. So they would get chemo light so that they could still go to work. And instead of killing a fly with a sledgehammer, which is cancer, they couldn't. That kind of stuff is things that you don't even think about, right? Why would you ever think about it if you weren't in cancer treatment? And so the resources to help these patients is so important. And I care a lot about that now. And perhaps I should have cared about it my whole life, but I didn't know any better. And now that I know better, I definitely, when I, give money to philanthropic causes, it's not just for cancer research. It's to organizations that help these men with groceries and childcare and transportation so that they can focus on themselves a little more.
Okay, so kind of a little bit elaborating on the aspect with the product. So for patients, with breast cancer in mind in this aspect, why is it important to have this non-hormonal option available to them whilst, receiving treatment or even, in survivorship?
Yeah. So the way the product works is so two things. So it's called Phexxi, Phexxi. And it's not just because it rhymes with sexy, it's because it speaks to the mechanism of action. So the pH, so the product works by maintaining a normal vaginal pH. And a lot of women who think about their bodies, particularly when they're in treatment or post-treatment, they learn so much more about their body and how it works, perhaps, than they ever did, because oftentimes we're not really taught about it in school very much. And the internet is usually not helpful because it scares the hell out of you, right? But our product, a normal vaginal pH for most women is 3.5 to 4.5. Okay. So when semen enters or chlamydia pathogens or gonorrhea, that pH rises to 7 or 8. That's what makes a woman get pregnant. That's what makes a woman get sexually transmitted infections. So our product, Phexxi, is acid buffering. So once you insert it, it helps the vagina just maintain normal vaginal pH. So it makes it inhospitable to semen. So one, it's important for women in treatment because it will not interact with any of the other medications they're on, right? Because there's no, it's not a synthetic hormone that's circulating through their body every day, right? This is on demand. So once you stop taking it, it's out of your body, right? Completely. But there's not a systemic effect in the body. So they don't have to worry about what treatment they're on for cancer, number one, which is super important, right? Number two, they don't have to take something every single day and remember every single day when they don't need it. They only use it when they're having sex. And the other thing that's very important is that I've talked to a lot of cancer patients in survivorship, and they have said that vaginal dryness is very, very serious, but it's awkward, and they feel that it's just, they're not ashamed of it, but they don't really talk about it, and they don't really know who to talk about, because a lot of these women, you know what they say to me? They say, "Look, I'm lucky to be alive. I feel like it makes people think, what is wrong with me that I want to talk about sexuality? Like, what am I, a nymphomaniac?" And we sort of joke about it. But I recently talked to an oncologist, okay, Dr. Doshi, who we like a lot, and she said to me, "When men go through cancer treatment, particularly for prostate issues, their number one concern is, can they still get an erection?" She said, "I want you to imagine if a woman said, 'Well, I'm very worried about, can I still have an orgasm?' They would think that a woman was crazy and she should just care about saving her life." So the quality of life for women, I believe, is something that we need to talk about more, that we need to lean into, that it's not just the physical impacts of cancer. And yes, we're starting more to talk about the psychological impacts that happen, but we also need to talk about the sexual impacts, because a lot of these women have partners and they still want to have intimacy and they don't want cancer to change their life. They want to go back to the life they had before they were diagnosed. And so why Phexxi is so important and special is that it allows these women to still have intimacy. They don't have to worry about this product interacting with other things they're doing. They don't have to worry about hormones in their body. And they hopefully will have a little more pleasurable sex because it's lubricating already. And they don't have to worry about some lubricant that they don't know what the ingredients are in either. So I'm really excited about that. And the final thing is that I want to be appropriately provocative. And I want to be able to say to these cancer patients, "Look, pleasurable sex should not be something that's off the table for you. You should get to care about your sexuality as much as anybody, and perhaps more so, because you should definitely get the benefit and the upside of a little joy after you go through all this hell, you know?"
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.